Derek Brown signing a four-year, $96 million deal with the Panthers, including $68 million guaranteed. We'll also go through our favorite defensive back prospects, along with our favorite front seven prospects. You are listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You are listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. Chris Kostich alongside me, CJ Medeiros. Sorry for the postponement again. A lot of busy schedules on our end, to say the least, but we're still getting episodes out. And right now we're going to start with the most recent signing of the week, Derek Brown, defensive tackle for the Panthers, getting a big four-year, $96 million deal with $63 million guaranteed, and pretty good one at that as well. He was second in tackles for this defensive team. He led the entire defensive line in tackles with 103 total, along with two sacks, seven tackles for loss. Played all 17 games as well, which is huge. And a guy that's been with the Panthers this entire time as well. So in general, this is on paper, it seems like a pretty solid guy for the Panthers to have gone back, or to at least have for another 4 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. The thing with this signing is that after letting a guy like Brian Burns walk, you absolutely have to grab somebody else. I mean, or at least retain them, which is why Derek Brown, who's easily, I believe, after last season, especially like a top five defensive tackle these days, I definitely think this is a wise investment because, as you know, last year you drafted a kid, Bryce Young, first overall. You have to build some kind of a team around him on offense and on defense. And after getting rid of guys like Dante Jackson and Brian Burns and Jeremy Chin, well, you're going to need to rebuild, raise the floor of the team, and this is a small step in the right direction because Derek Brown is just a scary, scary just guy to go up against, you know?
Yeah, and led all D tackles, as you said, led all D tackles in tackles this year, as mentioned, 106. And this was something that, as you said, with Brian Burns leaving, you needed to keep some sort of big defensive presence. And with all things going wrong in Carolina, they don't have a first round pick. Their future is looking so bleak right now. And so you got to do whatever you can to kind of stop the bleeding at this point. And that kind of is what makes this signing a pretty solid signing at the end of the day.
Yeah, because as it sits right now, if you look at the rest of that defense, right? And by the way, I didn't even touch on the fact they also lost linebacker Frankie Louvu as well. And it's just weird because their defense isn't terrible. Because you already have Derek Brown, but you also got A'shaun Robinson. You signed DJ Wonnum as well recently. They still have linebacker Shaq Thompson, but then they also got guys like Josie Jewell and Jadeveon Clowney. You got Dane Jackson from Buffalo, and you signed other guys like Jordan Fuller. So it's just they're not terrible, but as I've mentioned before, it's really kind of about raising the floor because this team probably won't be competing this year because, you know, you're trying to salvage Bryce Young after you put him through the ringer his rookie year. I mean, your running backs are still, you have Miles Sanders and Shuba Hubbard. There's also, I guess, he's thrown to Deontay Johnson, Adam Thielen, and Jonathan Mingo, which isn't great, but not terrible. Your starting tight end, I think, is like Tommy Tremble. So, yeah, I understand what they're trying to do, especially with some of the recent O-line signings. Like, if I recall correctly, they did bring in a really good pair of guards like Damian Lewis from Seattle and Robert Hunt from Miami. But overall, I just, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. That's really as much as I can say. But I will, you know, give him a polite little golf clap for at least extending, as it sits now, what could be the best player on their team.
Yeah, and that's all it is at this point. You just got to stop the bleeding and hope for the best to try to give yourself a better chance at a better future. And that's what it is at this point. You handed Chicago all the first round pick or the first overall pick. It's not good. Not we've said it so many times this past year that the Panthers are in just such a shitty situation, and they put themselves in this shitty situation. And they, it's what's the term for it? It's can't think of it right now, but it's a PR term. But anyways, you get what I'm trying to say. It's you're trying to not what was that?
Is it like damage control?
Yeah, damage control. Thank you. This is all just damage control at this point. You're trying to not put more gasoline on the fire than you already have.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And I've mentioned that the Panthers really aren't going to contend this year, but it's literally just about trying to save Bryce Young. And maybe, just maybe next year, you could probably hope to be around or above 500.
Yeah.
It all depends what they do in this draft. Cause like you said, you know, they chucked off their first round pick to Chicago. And it just so happens, this is the first team since I want to say the Cleveland Browns who are going to earn the number one overall pick in back to back years, except for the fact, well, it's not really your pick now, is it?
Yeah, it's true. And now we'll just have to see how Panthers GM Dan Morgan can draft at this point. This is because obviously you can draft as well as you can in the first two rounds, but sometimes the money is made in the late rounds, and that's where Dan Morgan's going to have to get after at this point. You got anything else to add for this one?
No, this is pretty cut and dry, I dare say.
Yeah, I'd say so myself. We'll move on. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go through our favorite defensive back prospects. Actually, just CJ's defensive back prospects, Mr. Draft Guy over here. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You are listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast presented by Powered 18 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros. And now it's time for CJ's bread and butter, the draft section of today's podcast. First, we're going to go through the defensive back prospects. And yeah, the big story really is the quarterbacks, obviously. But there are some good defensive backs in this draft coming up. Tarian Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid, McKinstry. And potentially our first starting white cornerback since what, 2003, 2001, whatever it is, Cooper DeJean from Iowa. So that's just 5 that I kind of just rattled off right there. Would you say that those would be the top 5 defensive prospects that I just rattled off? I mean, it seems that way just from it seems that way just from the research for most of these prospecting, researching sites and whatnot. But is there another name that you would probably throw in there?
Now, as it sits right now, I'm just looking at corners, all right? And I do want to give a quick disclaimer. Chris, this is something that you've already mentioned, and I think you're more right than you realize. They, when I say they, I just mean the NFL in general, as it sits now, and the media, they seem to have forgotten that this is a pretty decent, dare I say, above average defensive draft, because we always are talking about, oh, you know, the quarterbacks, it's a deep receiver class, lots of O-linemen. The defenders have gotten extremely overlooked. And this is actually a pretty deep corner class, if I do say so myself. So you already mentioned Terry and Arnold. There's also Quinyon Mitchell, Nate Wiggins, Clay McKinstry, and Cooper DeJean. But there are some other guys that just intrigue me as perhaps late first, early second round picks. I'm talking about Ennis Rakestraw Jr. out of Missouri, Kamari Lassiter out of Georgia, DJ James out of Auburn, and Iowa State's TJ Tampa as well. And another one that's been crawling up draft boards is Rutgers' very own Max Melton. So when it comes to corners, real quick, I just want to talk about the top two in my eyes. You could call them 1A and 1B. That's Alabama's Terrion Arnold and Toledo's Quinyon Mitchell. So Arnold, he is my number one. Some people have Mitchell number one. This is nothing against Mitchell. I just really like Arnold. You know, Alabama can churn out some pretty darn good defensive backs. So, you know, he's a little on the lighter side of being 189 pounds, but he's – a little tall for a corner, you know, at 6 feet flat. And, you know, he's got 4.540. That's pretty good. He's very athletic. I would definitely say he's more of a man cover guy. So if you run a man scheme, it's definitely like something great to have. So he's a very lanky corner. You know, I mean, like I said, 6 feet tall, 189 pounds. He's very agile. His man coverage, like I said, that's the thing. That's where he plays with confidence. He can press. He can play off, but he sticks to you. A very sticky corner. He's got, and he's a fluid mover. And this is what you're looking for, especially in today's air raid offense. He's aggressive. This man attacks the ball. And, hey, Coach Saban taught him well. That's all I got to say. But there is a drawback to this, and this is something that scares me. Is it? There's often a downside with a lot of man corners. He's physical, right? He attacks the ball, but he can be too aggressive. And NFLDraftBuzz.com says it best, quote, "While physical, can be prone to drawing penalties due to overly aggressive play in man coverage." And you're going to go to the NFL where there are receivers that are experts at drawing flags. Heck, we're now seeing a large part of the game where quarterbacks will just chuck it up, have a receiver flop a la the NBA, and in hopes of drawing a flag. You know what happens. I'm not going to look at anyone, Travis Kelce, but, you know, that is just how it is. So the thing is, I feel like if Arnold wasn't in this draft class with all these elite receivers and quarterbacks, I definitely call him a lock for the top 10. But, you know, I think in my most recent mock draft, we have him like somewhere in like the 12 to 15 range. You know, that makes sense. Because just.
Yeah, no, and that's the big story, right? It's a very offensive heavy draft class. And that, like we were saying, that's the big story of this. And so a lot of these defensive guys are going to be kind of thrown off to the side, but especially the defensive backs, it's a pretty strong class by the looks of it. So my question is at that point, with it being such an offensive heavy class, would you expect to see that maybe these top five guys don't make it past the, or they won't get drafted till late? Dare I say third round?
Wait, third round, maybe in the case of guys like TJ Tampa and DJ James, but you know, Mitchell and Arnold are definite first round locks. This is
I'm not saying guys like Mitchell and Arnold or anything like that or Wiggins. I'm saying like more towards like maybe Newbin or DeJean, guys like you mentioned as well.
So I could definitely see the argument for Newbin lasting and Kinchins as safeties, but we'll get to safeties. But real quick, I do want to take a quick glance at Quinyon Mitchell. Mitchell, for me, is one of the most intriguing prospects. You know, out of Toledo, probably a big school, you know, 6 feet, 195 pounds. I remember how I mentioned, you know, Arnold or Terrion Arnold being a good man cover guy. this kid, Quinyon Mitchell, is a force in zone. And he, you know, just can, you know, just sit in his zone and just wait for the ball. And can easily, despite his wiry frame, he can definitely move a receiver or two. In fact, he runs a 4.33 40 and just in an elite vertical as well. I mean, scary, just explosive. And he, like I said, he's fast, elite athlete, and just the vision. He's a very cerebral, very heady kind of guy. This man knows the playbook front and back. You know what I mean? And he is elite at recognizing plays, practically lives in the film room. And when you pair that with that athleticism, oh, he's deadly. But there's one thing that concerns me. He's not, despite the fact he's a good zone guy, I would say he's not really a ball hawk. He doesn't attack the ball. He's a good physical guy, but he's not going to grab you those highlight reel picks. For example, I believe last season he had 18 what they call passes defensed. That's pretty darn good. One pick. One. So if you're going, if you're looking for like the corners nowadays, they get you 6 to 7 picks a season. I don't know if Mitchell's going to be that out of the gate. Out of the gate. And I have to say, I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I just let this one slide. Being from Toledo is, it's a little concerning.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That was going to be my next question. Could we see a guy like Mitchell kind of slide in the draft because he's from Toledo and, you know, looking off of Toledo's schedule real quick, you know, the best team that they probably play, I mean, there's not really many great teams that they play. I mean, maybe you could say the best team they played was Wyoming and they played them in the Barstool Sports Arizona Bowl and lost to them. But most of these games were kind of just one way. Like they won most of their games besides their home or besides the opener against Illinois where they lost by 2. But you know, Toledo's playing teams like Illinois, San Jose State, Northern Illinois, UMass, and they only won by 17 to UMass, but Ball State, Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan. It's not like they're playing like Oregon or, well, Oregon's a bad example, but you get what I mean.
Because if he goes to the league and you're going to, you know, be playing like just much better receivers, the learning curve could be steep. And there is somebody that you were talking about before this episode that I do want to give a quick mention to, just for sheer kindness reasons, Cooper DeJean out of Iowa.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but corner's getting taller. This is another 6-footer. He's 203. Got a 4.5 40, which isn't terrible. And he's kind of like a jack of all trades. He's good in zone. He's good in man. He's a really good tackler, though, given that. But there's nothing that he's truly elite in. And I would say he's also a very physical corner. You know, he's a little heavier than some of the others. But that's muscle, let me tell you. This guy can muscle around DBs. But there's kind of a trade-off. Being a heavy, more muscular corner might sacrifice his speed and fluidity, if that makes sense. But I don't know how much that's going to hurt him if he's still, like, just sticking to him, you know, and just muscling him around. He's got some good burst, though. I'll give him that. He's a really just good athlete regardless, and his technique is darn near flawless. Now, he's weird because I have seen quite a few rumors that they might transition him to safety, which, I mean, maybe. I wouldn't hate it, but
overall, I mean, it's something
could go late first round. That's my grade.
And it's not like, I mean, him transitioning to safety wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I mean, we have seen a lot of defensive backs that start out as corners that have to transition to safety because they're not transitioning as well to the league as a cornerback, and they have to try to play safety to kind of get that roster spot, and they end up excelling at safety, like Devin McCourty for the Patriots. He started out as a cornerback and then had to transition to safety because he was struggling and wasn't playing well as a corner, and ended up being one of the best safeties in the league after that. So it's not like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but if it comes time to having to do that transition, how is he going to, how will he progress with that transition? That's the only thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a valid point. Then real quick, I do want to take a quick gander at these safeties. There are two that catch my eye. Minnesota's Tyler Newbin and Miami's Cameron Kitchens. So, I mean, you could throw Georgia's Javon Bullard there too, but Newbin and Kitchens, I think, are the best. So, Tyler Newbin, just as a prospect, is pretty good. Some would say he's undersized, maybe not as fast as you want, but I will die on the hill that he is a probably a late, maybe mid first round pick, like late, like around the later part of the middle first round to basically he's going in the first round if this wasn't, you know, the quarterback craze. And if the wide receiver and offensive tackle class wasn't as deep as it is. So Newbin has extreme explosiveness. As I've said before, very fluid mover. He's another one that knows his playbook well and can read an offense great. He's a leader. He's a good locker room guy. Just the instincts are nuts. But he's a fluid mover, but he lacks that burst. You know what I mean? The overall explosiveness that you would want, which if you're playing safety, I guess it's not the worst thing in the world as if you're playing corner. But I don't know. He's more of like a ball hawking type of guy, if that makes sense. You know, he's more, he's there, you know, he's going to grab the pick. He's going to knock down the ball. He's going to contest every catch, but it's the tackling thing that's, you know, that can kind of be a bit of a red flag. And in an era where, you know, we're moving more towards positionless defense, especially with safeties, where full disclosure, I think Newbin can play free and strong both sides, but he's not going to be playing run defense. You know what I mean? He's not going to go out there and make the tackle.
Yeah.
And as for Kitchens, Kitchens is weird because he used to be my number one safety, but Newbin overtook him. And Kitchens is just, I mean, he's good. But he's underrated. I'll give him that. He's average speed. I'd say, like, you know, he's a good athlete. But once a lot of it is instinct for him. He's quote ball hawking in nature. He's a big hitter. He is a strong and he's got strong anticipation. You know what I mean? Just the springiness. That just allows him to just not think, but just do. That's what you want. And it's just, but the thing is, though, the instincts are great, but the overall physical attributes might be what holds him back. Because he's one of those weird defenders that can tackle and can tackle well, but only if it's like a hit stick. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, if he's going to hit you, he's going to run you down. He's not going to arm tackle and twist you. You know what I mean? Like, so just do with that what you will. Overall, though, I don't see Newbin or Kitchens going first round just because that's just the nature of this draft. But if I had to guess as far as corners go, I definitely believe that that Arnold, Mitchell, and other guys that we didn't mention, like Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and the one we did mention, DeGene, our first round locks, and maybe Ennis Rakestraw Jr. or Kamari Lassiter sneak in the first round.
So who of these guys would you say would you could you see slide the most?
That's tough. At least the ones that I say are first rounders. I feel that DeGene and McKinstry could very well slide. Heck, I've seen a few mock drafts where McKinstry isn't even in the first round, which I think is personally blasphemous because he and Arnold were menaces at Alabama. But, you know, it's all about just where they go and what their situation is. Because quick bit on Kool-Aid McKinstry. This man, I truly believe has what, just when it comes to his play style, not even just his physical attributes, but just how he is in coverage and just playing just pure air defense, could very well have the highest ceiling in the draft as far as corners go. But there are a few things that worry me. Like, you know how they say quarterbacks need to have short memory? Well, DBs need it too. And this guy, if he gets burned a few times, might start playing conservative. But these are, but every, the reason I say his ceiling so high is every issue he has can be coachable. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have a lot of patience. You know, he, there's a lot of wasted motion in his transition play. But, and, you know, he can be a little aggressive. But like I said, these are coachable issues. But I wouldn't be shocked if McKinstry or DeGene end up sliding.
I think those are all good points. And like you said, it, a lot of these issues that you mentioned are very coachable. And if they allow themselves to be coachable, they'll be great corners at the end of the day. Could it mean that they, that the coachable issues turn them into a top five cornerback? No, it doesn't necessarily mean that, but it means that it could at least extend their life shelf in the league.
Yeah.
Anything else you would like to add before we move on?
No, that's all I got in the way of corners. They're, like I said, but this is like a sneakily deep corner class. So don't be shocked if, like I said, guys like TJ Tampa, Kamari Laster, Ennis Rakestraw might creep into the first.
The chips. Yeah, and who knows? Obviously. And who knows? Maybe some of these defensive guys end up overtaking some of the top heavy offensive guys in the draft as well, and kind of sneak their way in. Maybe they sneak their way into the top 10 at that point. You never know.
It will be.
So we'll move on to for a short break. When we come back, we'll go through our the favorite front seven prospects for this upcoming draft. Not as deep as, or sneakily deep as, the defensive back prospects, but there's definitely some good ones. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to the Fumbrewski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumble Risk Podcast, Power 88 Dean Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, and our draft guy, CJ Medeiros. We'll move on to our last subject, our the CJ's favorite front seven prospects for this upcoming draft. And we were talking about this before the show. It's the front seven is not as deep as the defensive back prospects. And we'll probably see more of front seven guys kind of slide back more so than the corners and the safeties will, but not to say that we couldn't see a linebacker or an edge rusher be in the top 20 or top 25, but it isn't as lovely as a picture as the defensive backs.
Yeah. So when I said it's not as deep, I was strictly talking about linebackers, like the true Mike guys, like, you know,
yeah,
your Fred Warners. Not many of them here. In fact, I would go as far as to say that as it sits right now on the day of recording, April 6, 2024, I do not think there will be a pure linebacker, you know, like a Fred Warner type, taken in the first round. There will not be. I mean, there's some guys like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. out of Clemson or Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M that I think might go second round, perhaps. But I don't know what it is. These guys just aren't even just considered. A lot of it, I think, is do I think that Cooper and Trotter Jr. could go in the first round if it were any other year? Yeah, I do. But what did I say about DBs? This is just another case where the nature of this year's draft is pushing some really good defensive prospects out of the first round. Because let's face it, there are only 32 first round picks, right? Which means, I mean, not every good prospect can go first round. And I definitely think that both Cooper and Trotter Jr. could be steals wherever they go. But real quick, as far as we're talking about strict linebackers, let me talk to you about Jeremiah Trotter Jr. out of Clemson. The man, you know, obviously you can tell former Philly linebacker Jeremiah Trotter Sr.'s son. So Trotter Jr., one reason that he isn't, looked upon super high from his time at Clemson is that he's undersized. That's really what it is. Not anything to do with play style. He's just undersized. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, but CJ, Ray Lewis was undersized. I'm like, yes.
I was just about to say something about Ray Lewis, too.
He was a real killer on the field. Let's be honest, despite being undersized. But Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is 6 feet tall and 228 pounds. For the record, for those of you keeping track at home, you know, myself and Chris are both 6 feet tall. So, Coach, no, I'm kidding.
I weigh a lot less, that's for sure.
Understandable. So, he runs a 4.6 40. His bench was okay, but it's how he plays. This guy puts his heart and soul into everything he does on the field. Just an elite competitor. The energy is just there. Top level motor. And his deal. He's a big coverage linebacker, you know? He works in coverage, jumps in front of the ball, and can definitely knock around some tight ends. And he's another one that gets the playbook, lives in the film room, but he's just an athlete. You know what I mean? Just like a pure athlete. Not the fastest, not the strongest, but, oh my God, this guy's going to be a problem. And not to mention, using his small size, he gets under the radar, he can get under pads, he can blitz, and every hit with this man is a hit stick. But the thing is, the size can hurt, because when it's just pure run defense, bigger offensive linemen can just easily toss him aside. And what if he's going up against a running back like in the NFL? What if he runs into Derrick Henry? I mean, Derrick Henry, who is like, well, what is he? But he's like 6'2", 240. Scary man, at least if you're a defender. So yeah, like these bigger, like power backs might play with him, which is why I don't think he's going in the first round. But just being undersized is going to hurt him immensely, which is why I don't think he's going in the first round. But make no mistake, whoever does draft him, energy and just the will and the want will not be a problem. Because while in Clemson, 87 total tackles, 5.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles is like a kind of like a box of safety. You can't hate it. You know, you really can't. But when it comes to defense, we're talking about the front, not even the front seven, the front four. That's where this draft makes it. And oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. First, we're going to talk about the defensive tackles. There are two big-time prospects that I know of and the ones that I can see going in the first round. Right? Now, I don't know about you, but like I said, I really only have two defensive tackle prospects going here. And that, of course, is Jerzon Newton from Illinois and oh my God, I can't believe his name's escaping me. It's aggravating. He's a guy from Texas, not Tavondre Sweat, the other one.
Byron Murphy.
And my computer. Yeah, Byron Murphy, that's it. I was trying to grab it, but my computer froze. Yeah, no, the site I'm on has completely just shut down, so whatever.
All right, I got the site up right now, so we can go off of myself here. So, yeah, nice. The player that you're talking about or that you're referring to is Byron Murphy. That's it. And then two other guys. Well, we can save this for when we get into the edge rushers and whatnot. But yeah, Byron Murphy being one of them, Jazan Nguyen from Illinois, Tavondre Sweat, who you had just mentioned as well. And another guy on here as well that was part of a really good defense and a national championship defense as well, Chris Jenkins. So there's some dogs in this list, and a lot of in the dogs that we were talking about were competing in the college football playoff as well, one of them being a national champion. So definitely some good prospects in that sense. They know what it takes to win already in that sense. So, and have shown that they can cause problems for offenses. It's just a matter of if they can, obviously this is for everyone, obviously, but can it translate to the NFL and this and that? That's obviously the question for every single prospect, but ever so it's more so because you got these guys that performed at a very high level and were competing for the big prize as well. So that's what makes them more in a fishbowl per se.
Yeah, I agree. And there's one thing that I do want to note about these defensive tackles from Newton to Murphy to other guys like Darius Robinson and Chris Jenkins, and even other ones like Braden Fisk and Rook. I think it's like Aurora. They're under, and I notice I'm leaving out Tavondre Sweat. I'll get there. These guys are undersized for defensive tackles. You know, Jazan Nguyen is 6'2", 304. Byron Murphy's 6 feet, 297. These are like the smaller, more Aaron Donald type pass rushing defensive tackles. But then there's Tavondre Sweat, who sees this and just chucks that narrative out the window at 6'4", 366 pounds. He's your typical, like, big man, you know, like a Vince Wilfork. You know what I mean? Like a Vince Wilfork and a Ndamukong Suh, somebody like that.
Oh, yeah.
And this draft is just showing the way that the NFL is headed. You know, like I said, with these smaller pass rushing defensive tackles, not so much nose tackles these days. But then, of course, we got the edge rushers, and oh boy, there are a lot of them. This is a very, and I mean a very deep edge rusher class. There are three that stand out as bona fide first round picks. I mean, these guys are all going top 20. Two, I think, are going top 10. There is Dallas Turner from Alabama, Jared Verse from Florida State, and Leatu Latu from UCLA. And then also in the first round, there's Penn State's Chop Robinson, who I said I believe is going in the first. And that's pretty much it for that. I mean, there are others maybe that could slide in, but those are like my big four. And after guys like Turner, Verse, and Latu, and even with Robinson, then there's kind of a drop-off with guys like Kansas' Austin Booker, Washington's Braylon Trice, Chris Braswell from Alabama, Jonah Ellis from Utah. But there are four bona fide first-rounders, and I will die on this hill. That is Turner, Verse, Latu, and Robinson.
So with all that being said, all the names that we just – threw out there into the wind, or you threw out there into the wind. Who would you say, especially from this top four, who would you say is probably the more underrated, and who would you say is probably your favorite of the four?
Ooh, the underrated one for me is Chop Robinson out of Penn State. This man, oh my God, he's going to be a problem. Now, he's more of a project. So I view him kind of like, remember Trayvon Walker coming out of Georgia?
Yep.
That's how I view Chop Robinson. He's very raw, but oh, if you can tap into his potential, he will be very scary indeed. So 6'3", 254, right? Runs a sub 4.5 40, has a 34.5 inch vertical and a 4.25 shuttle. Once again, that's scary hours. And he's
that's scary.
An elite pass rusher where I think he'll have to get a little better, got a little boning up to do on run defense. But when it comes to pass rushing, oh, it is just scary. He's just that long, just long-armed, agile, just freak of nature. That's kind of like what the modern NFL is shifting to. Just the energy that he plays with, the passion, like I said, a high motor, just chef's kiss, beautiful. He's very explosive. He is a lethal first step. He's got the good bend that you would want to get around defensive linemen. And not to mention top 10 on Bruce Feldman's freak athlete list for college ball. And when it comes to weaknesses, it's like I said, he needs to just kind of diversify his arsenal. You know what I mean? Because he's a good power rusher, right? Very explosive. However, he's more of I'm trying to think of how to put this. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but Chris is gone. But don't worry, it'll be fine. Robinson is much more, like I said, he's a project. That's like the nicest way I can put that. But I do like him very much. And since Chris asked me who my favorite one was out of all these guys, that has to be Florida State's Jared Verse. Oh, this man. He's what you want on the D-line. 6'4". 254 pounds, runs a sub 4.6 40, got a great vertical, great broad jump, scary bench press too. I think he did like what, 31 reps? Yeah, that is something else. Just the power, just what we would call a bag, if that makes sense. You know, he's got a lot of just moves in his arsenal. You know, the swim move, the bull rush, just everything, just insane. His strength that he brings is just phenomenal. He can easily toss aside offensive linemen. As an edge rusher, that's something that cannot be overstated enough. And like I said, just the explosiveness is what you want. Well, the only real weaknesses that I see from him is that he's not a very good run defender, if that makes sense. Whereas he's more prone to chase sacks rather than just outright run defend. And just when it comes to tackling, it could be an issue where he's known to arm tackle, which is good when you're strong. But in the league, strict arm tackling will not cut it. So there you go. That's basically what we think of all the defensive prospects in this draft from the front seven to the back four. So, by the way, we are not supposed to pull back the curtain here, but Chris's laptop just died. So it looks like I'm going to be the one doing the wrap-up. So above all, just keep that in mind when it comes time for our mock draft, which should be, I believe. So for those of you who don't know, we do have a big group mock draft that we do before draft day. That, if the day is right, should be Tuesday the 23rd. So definitely stick around for that as we go through more of our draft coverage. Overall, that'll do it for us tonight. Thanks for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And don't forget about our Instagram page at FumbleRooski_podcast and our TikTok, FumbleRooskiPod. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Once again, gotta plug the social media. Please follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and latest coverage on the NFL. I take care to mention it twice because we're this close to 10,000 followers. I think we can do it. So that's all for me, CJ Medeiros, and of course, Chris Kostic, whose laptop just kind of died on him, but it's all right. We forgive him. So other than that, we will see you next week. Over and out.